Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast. In this episode, we bring you the results of the MSI MOA 2014 Grand Finals in Taipei, Taiwan, and I show Darren some of the special hardware that they got to use there. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia. With me today, I have Darren McCain.
Dennis, I know that you just got back from a very special trip, and most of our listeners are probably aware, but if they are not, where have you been?
I went to Taipei, Taiwan for a week back in October.
Which seems like so long ago, but what was in Taipei this time?
It was the MSI MOA 2014 Grand Final.
And MOA is?
The Master Overclocking Arena, which is an overclocking competition hosted by MSI.
Fantastic, and I know that you have competed in this event in the past. Did you compete this year?
I did, and as some of the astute listeners will know, we posted some details of my qualifying, and also there is a couple of articles on Hardware Asylum that kind of outline what it was that I did to compete, you know, what I had to buy, the testing methods, the cooling methods, and some of the background.
Well, I don't want to rehash that too much because they can go back and listen to this podcast, and I highly encourage you to do so. But this particular trip was different because you were invited to go over and participate in a different way.
Right. I was a video co-host, sort of speak. So yeah, I was working with the overclocking TV guys, and I was basically the tech guy or the technical consultant co-host slash cable guy on the live stream while they were broadcasting the finals.
Now, I had the opportunity to tune in and watch some of the live cast, and I can tell you that it was really very interesting. I have never seen a live overclocking competition like that before.
That's interesting you should say that, because this was the first time that they did this style of broadcast. In the past, for the past 7 years of covering the MSI MOA, because it's one of the longest running overclocking competitions, they would basically set up one or two cameras to pretty much just show what was happening in the room.
Okay.
So it was just kind of an overview. I would watch it and try to be interested, but it was actually really difficult because it was really hard to see what was going on. The 1 year that MSI had it in a sports arena, it was actually set up kind of like in a little battle cage sort of situation.
Oh, yeah, like a League of Legends match or something.
Yeah, and they had a couple of cameras floating around on tripods, and they would broadcast the video from that, which was a little bit more interesting to watch. You know, there's music looping in the background, so there was nobody talking, there was no one explaining what was going on. They would go and show some video of Extreme Addict kind of freaking out and sweating a lot and then stopping, drinking a beer, and then working on his system again and then yelling at the guy that was helping him. And it was really kind of fun to see the animation, but there was no audio sort of commentary to explain the backstory of why that happened.
I know that you guys did a lot of things different, but before we get too deeply into talking about the nickel and dime aspects of that, I want to give everybody a recap of what exactly they missed so they can go watch those replays and also give them a little bit of background on what was going on before we talk further about it.
Okay.
And I know the event took place over 3 days.
Well, 2 days, really.
2 days.
2 days. There was 1 day for setup, which...
Oh, that's right.
I was involved for 3-4 days of it, actually. Yeah. So
the engagement, the competition, if you will, was divided into two different sections, the classic battle and the unlimited.
Yeah, it's the no limits battle.
Oh, that's right. They call it the no limits battle. And just like it sounds like, the classic battle had specific equipment. And this equipment was provided by MSI and set up in advance, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, it was provided in advance. So the motherboard, I believe, they got to use it and prep it.
Oh, okay.
So when they showed up in the competition, they were able to, you know, basically get their CPU, plug in their motherboard, and then start setting up their system.
Well, I'm looking at the list of equipment, and I'll run through it real quick for the folks at home. So it looks like the motherboard was an MSI Z97 M-Power motherboard, which is a motherboard we've reviewed already.
Yes.
And liked.
It's a very good board.
And then the graphics card, I'm going to save that for last so we can talk about that in a little bit more detail.
Okay.
So the CPU was an Intel Core i7, the 4790K, which is
Devil's Canyon.
A great processor. We've spent a lot of time working with that on the bench here. The memory, G-Skill F3 2600C 10D 8 GTX, which is a pretty big mouthful, but is that 8 gigs?
I believe it's an 8 gig kit or a 16 gig kit. I'm not really sure, but it was the Trident style.
Oh, but a pretty competitive high-end setup. And we've had great luck here in the lab with G-Scale memory, so that was a pleasant surprise. Well, not really a surprise. I guess expected advantage there. And the SSD was provided by Kingston, the HyperX 3K 120, which is a really fast drive and just big enough to make it work. The power supply, though, the Cooler Master V1200 Platinum.
Yep, that's the 1200 watts. I believe it's a single rail, very high amperage.
Yeah.
This is one of the highest amperage power supplies that you can get.
Well, and a very expensive, very stable power supply. Keyboard and mouse were provided by SteelSeries, the Apex RAW and the Kinzo version 2. Not really a factor in the overclocking, but nice equipment.
Yep.
Monitor.
Sponsorships.
Yes, of course. The monitor is provided by ViewSonic, the VX2370 SMH LED, which is a monitor that quite a few of us have had or have now. A great standard from ViewSonic. The bench table must also be a sponsor because I'm not as familiar with this, except from the video.
Yes, the Mastech test bench. And being on the competition floor, I noticed that not very many overclockers opted to use the test bench. They just went with their old method of setting up on the table.
Well, I think that we're all creatures of habit, but there were a few that used it, and it looked like a really nice cage, minimalistic, but it provided a solid framework.
Yeah, and the nice thing about the Domestic bench is it's very thick metal, so once you set it up, your system is solid. It's not going to move, but it's also a little constricting.
And this is the Bench/Test Table Mini version 1.0, and it was provided in graphics black, which made a nice contrast for the MSI colors. The operating system, Windows 7, SP1, 64-bit, and Windows XP, SP3. Now, why two operating systems?
For the 2D benches, a lot of the guys used XP because you have more tweaks that are available, so you can get a more consistent score. And it also responded a lot better to 2D sort of benching. Whereas Windows 7, there's a lot of background stuff that goes on. So if you bench SuperPi with Windows 7, you can't get a very consistent score all the time. And you need to have Windows 7 for the FireStrike benchmark, DirectX 11.
That's right. So let's talk a little bit about that. I haven't got the equipment out of the way. The classic battle took place in three stages.
Three substations, or stages, yeah. So it was over 6 hours, 2 hours for SuperPi 32M, and it was basically the quickest time wins.
Right.
After that, it was Cinebench, which is a CPU-dependent benchmark. Some of the guys were using XP, some of the guys were using Windows 7. Windows 7 gives you better multi-threading, so a lot of guys were using that just to enhance their performance there. And then the last one was regular FireStrike. It wasn't even FireStrike Extreme. It was just the regular FireStrike.
An interesting choice.
Yeah. The results were really very competitive. And for the types of scores they were getting, based on the hardware that they were provided, they did pretty well.
Well, let's run through the top three or so by stage and see who came out on top. And then we can talk about who won the classic stage.
Okay. Well, I did talk about this for 2 days on the live stream. So, and believe it or not, it's been a few weeks since then, and I'm a little rusty. So I'm referring back to the hardwarebot.org competition page, which is the one that I used on the live stream and actually got in trouble for because I was supposed to go to the OC Esports page.
Oh, yeah. Well, I like the way they present that, Dennis, so we'll have to put that link in the show notes for folks.
Yeah. So we have SuperPi 32M. The winner of that stage was OC Windforce with 4 minutes and 49 seconds, 843 milliseconds.
Go OC Windforce.
Yeah. Followed by Toastly at 4 minutes, 52 seconds, followed by Vivi at 4 minutes, 54 seconds.
Now, I always have to ask, how did our American friend Mike CDM do?
Mike CDM actually came in fourth with 4 minutes and 54 seconds.
Not bad. Way to go, Mike.
Yeah, very strong competitor. The one thing that you will notice is that third and fourth is separated by 200 milliseconds.
Wow. Now that is quick.
Yeah. First and second is separated by basically 3 seconds. Third place is 2 seconds. So these are very, very close scores.
Now, I remember reading that over 100, I think 136 world records were set. Is that correct?
I believe that was some of the marketing speak. I would have to go in.
Well, and I know a lot of those were just the same record being broken over and over again. Nice job. And really, I think it shows the caliber of the competition that they were so close.
Yeah. So we have the next stage is Cinebench R15. And this is our multi-threaded CPU benchmark. And Moose 83, I believe he's German.
Moose 83 is German.
Yeah, he came in first. He won that stage with 1,233 Cinebenches, or CBs. And he was followed by De Weers, who is a South American competitor. Came in at 1,214 CBs, followed by Vivi again in third. And he had 1,213 CBs. So that's like 1 point difference between second and third.
And how did Mike do on that one for the Americans?
Actually, Mike had trouble with Cinebench. He didn't score very well at all.
Oh, no.
It took him a really long time to submit a score. He came in, looks like 12th, with 1196, which is still rather competitive.
Well, yeah, but just the difference between 12th and first place is very, very small. So yeah. Not as bad as it sounds for 12th place.
Well, no. And actually, we do have an American in fifth place, which was Staponzi.
Nice.
He had 1210 CBs.
Well, congratulations. That's a great finish.
A lot of people were not really counting Cinebench as being a very deciding factor in the competition.
Now, the competitions were weighted, right?
Let's see, SuperPi 32M had a 35% weight, whereas Cinebench only had a 30% weight.
And then Firestrike was also 35 then?
Yep, that's how you get your 100%.
Perfect.
So, you know, a lot of the judges were saying, well, Cinebench doesn't count. But I'm going, well, points are points, as we know, and they're all cumulative. So,
well, it's still 30%. That's a big chunk.
That is a huge chunk. But we'll see in Firestrike how this actually played out in terms of the weight.
So, well, speaking of Firestrike, how did that go?
Well, first place, we have Vivi with 16,411 marks.
That's a very respectable score.
Yeah, and he came in third place in the previous two stages, so we can kind of guess where he's going to land.
Very much so.
And we also have Toastly coming in second, 15,963 marks. And Nacho Arroyo, he came in third with 15,000.
Now, Nacho came
1,000 points
all the way from Argentina, one of the longer distances.
Yeah. I actually was sitting on the bus next to him on the way to the airport, and he was telling me it was going to take 2 days for him to get home.
Holy cow. Wow. Well, I'm glad he did well. So that brings us to the grand finals for the Classic.
Yeah, the grand final for the Classic. Oh, well, you should probably mention Mike CDM. He came in eighth place.
Very nice. So a solid comeback.
Mm-hmm. And Gunslinger took the sixth place position in Firestrike.
Well, very nice. So not a bad showing for the Americans.
No, not so much. So overall, we have Vivi taking first place.
Not a surprise there.
No, and followed by Toastly in second and third for OC Windforce. And I believe they were paying out money to fourth place as well, and that was Moose 83.
Way to go, guys. Well, congratulations. And our top American finisher was
Mike CDM.
In sixth place, which is very solid, especially considering that the Cinebench was not a fun trip for him.
No, actually, if he had done really well in Cinebench, he probably would have came in fourth place.
And at least finished in the money.
Mm-hmm.
But still very respectable. And this is his second trip, if I recall. So definitely showing improvement every time. And all of these scores, if I'm not mistaken from listening to you guys live, were higher than last year in the same events, where you had a one-for-one.
Right. Well, it was different hardware, slightly. So, you know, the benchmarks and the way that they run is pretty much the same. It all comes down to hardware bin. And a lot of the competitors were complaining that the IMC on the CPUs weren't as strong as they would have liked to see. The video cards were very new. It's not something that you can just buy and test. So it was difficult to use those. And they also came with some other little doodads that made it more difficult.
I did promise that we'd talk about that video card. And for completeness, I'll let you say what it is, but we're still going to come back to it.
All right. Well, it is the GTX 780 Ti Lightning, which if anybody that's surfed Newegg will know that there isn't a 780 Ti Lightning.
And this one is extra special because it is also the MOA edition.
The special MOA edition.
And we'll talk about that a little more in a minute. But for completeness, that is the last piece of equipment for the Classic Bal. And it's very special, definitely deserving of its own bit in the podcast.
Definitely.
So let's move on to the No Limits battle.
Yeah, the No Limits battle was, it paid down to fifth place. At the very end of the Classic battle, there was about 4 hours that the competitors could start competing in the No Limits battle. And this was basically a quest for hardware points. Now, if anybody has ever gone to hardwarebot.org and submitted a score, you'll know that if you are competing in a class that has a lot of competition and you place well, you get a whole lot of hardware points. Now, if you compete in a class that doesn't have a lot of competition, then you're guaranteed a record and you usually only get 2 points. So if it's a very obscure category where, like a processor that nobody is going to bother overclocking, like a locked Haswell or something like that,
right?
Nobody's going to submit scores for that because you can't actually overclock it. You're going to be guaranteed a gold cup because you fastest in hardware category for that benchmark, and you're going to get 2 hardware points. The No Limits battle was based off of accumulating hardware points, and there's a couple of different strategies for that. One is that you compete in a category where there's a lot of competition and you do well, so you're going to get, you know, double-digit points sometimes.
Right, right.
Or you take another approach and find really inexpensive hardware in a very obscure category and just run through all the benchmarks.
Mm-hmm. And try to put as many smaller scores on the board as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for instance, Toastly was taking the first approach. So he had 4 980Xs.
Oh, nice.
And he's running 4-way crossfire, basically running through all the 3D benchmarks and making a sweep. Well, that's a very competitive section. And if you're doing 4-way, 3-way, there's a lot of points to be had. There was a couple of other competitors like Wizardly who went through and bought basically $30 CPUs,
oh, no.
$40 CPUs, bought a whole bunch of those and was running through, you know, he found out which ones could get points and he ran through every single one of those. And there's a bonus points if you got a hardware record, I believe. So,
oh, and this might be where some of those records came from then, as across a lot of these little categories.
Yeah, I believe so. Because there was two competitors that did B-Boy G's. From Indonesia, he was taking the CPU route where he was doing a whole bunch of different CPUs, and Wizardly did the CPUs as well.
Okay.
And those two competitors came in first and second, believe it or not.
Well, let me stop for just a second and kind of tell what the equipment requirements were just for the sake of completeness.
Okay.
So for motherboard, you could have any MSI motherboard with a Z97, XNV9, or X99 chipset. Mm-hmm. So a pretty wide open field there. The graphics card was even more open. Radeon R9s, GTX 700 series, pretty much all of them. And you could have, as you mentioned, multiples. And I should point out that contestants were allowed to use their special 780 Ti Lightning MOA Edition cards.
Yes.
So that was an opportunity to get some points.
Mm-hmm.
Any Intel Pentium, Haswell, Haswell Refresh, Ivy Bridge E, or Haswell E processor.
Yeah, which is CPUs that they provide.
Nice.
MSI actually provided a 5960X for them to use, but a lot of the competitors didn't even bother doing the X99.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Any memory, any storage, and any power supply.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we had already kind of mentioned the MOA Lightning card, but I wonder, were there a lot of competitors that were using the same power supplies and memory and storage just for the sake of time?
Yep, that's correct. A lot of guys brought their own SSDs, but the power supply was already there, so they used it. And then memory, some guys brought their own memory, but for like Wizard and B-Boy G's, who was, you know, testing CPUs, they just used the competition memory.
Now, in the No Limits, they could compete in quite a few of the different software categories, as you mentioned.
Yeah, there was like 12, no.
Well, it looks like lots. Yeah, 15, it was quite, maybe.
Yeah, there was legacy benchmarks like SuperPy, 3DMark, 05, 03, Aquamark, and then you had the 2D benchmarks, which is Hardware Prime, HardwareBot Prime, XTU, Cinebench, Cinebench, WPrime. And then the 3Ds were really exciting, which was 3DMark Firestrike. We had 3DMark 11, the Heaven benchmark, 3DMark Vantage, and Catzilla.
Oh, wow. Catzilla.
Catzilla.
So I know that there are a lot of different variables to talk about. Mm-hmm. So let's just skip straight to the results and see who did well in the No Limits. And we've already mentioned a few names.
Right. So we have Wizard Lee. He came in first. He was he took the approach of benching just a bunch of obscure CPUs. So he got the bonus points plus the hardware points.
Nice.
And those were all Haswell based. So he was using a Z97 M-Power board. And believe it or not, he took home $2,500.
Very nice.
Yeah. B-Boy G's took the same approach with the Haswell obscure CPUs. The funny thing that we did on the live was we were watching Wizardly because Truffman's French and Wizardly's from France. Turns out that they were using the same exact CPU for the very last stage right before the No Limits ended. So it was basically a race to see who could actually have submit the score first.
Oh, no. Got to get those last points.
Yeah. In third place, Stepanzi.
Nice. Go USA.
Yeah. He took the obscure hardware approach, and he was using an R9 280 series graphics card. He wasn't using an X, so he was limited to three-way. And turns out that on HardwareBot, nobody had submitted scores for that particular card. So he was guaranteed points for every one of the benchmarks that he submitted.
Very nice. So good preparation there.
Yeah. Unfortunately, our guy, Mike CDM, did the same thing. He bought three of those R9 280 X cards and was going to do the same thing as the Ponzi, but then they would basically be competing against each other. So he decided, well, I'm just going to help out, run some other stuff just to keep myself busy and let Stepanzi take it over.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. Toastly came in fourth, and he was the one that took the R9 290X cards. And there's a couple of pictures floating around. I'll try to put one in the show notes of his way of setting up four-way crossfire.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was quite amazing. We'll just say that there was some wood and riser cards being used.
Oh, wow. Now that is something I'm going to have to see then.
Yeah. In fifth place was Vivi. And he did quite a few different 3D benchmarks. He was using the X99 and the Z97, and then a GTX 980 gaming card, which was provided by MSI, and then a 970 gaming card. But he came in fifth, and that actually paid out $500.
Well, on the plus side, he took home money, but I'm sure he was already feeling pretty good about the classic battle.
Yeah, he won twice. That's, good for him.
And that is a pretty solid recap of the MOA. Now, I know you wanted to talk a little bit more about the logistics of the video hosting.
All right. So, as I mentioned before, I was working with Overclocking TV. Great guys, by the way. And it's something that ever since they started broadcasting the overclocking competitions, I got really interested and I would help them out as I have in the past. And this is the first time that they decided to go, how I'm going to say, all out.
And I want to interrupt real quick to point out that this was featured on the front page of Twitch.
Yeah, several times.
Which provided a really a large boost to the viewers. I was on for quite a large period of at least the first day and a little bit of the rest of it. And I noticed that it was not uncommon to see, upwards of almost 1,000 people in the channel.
Yeah, and that was a constant 1,000. Mm-hmm. It was up until right before the stream crashed for...
oh, no.
Hardware reasons. It was like 1,000, 1,500, kind of fluctuating. Good interaction in the chat. Although while I was talking, Truffin and I were both talking, we weren't really paying too much attention to the chat.
Well, that's to be fair.
But everybody seemed to really like it. There was always the haters that came in and just kind of trashed on it. But...
well, that's what happens when you advertise on a gaming and video sharing site. There are a lot of folks that don't know what's going on, but I thought you guys did a great job of educating, and I noticed a lot of familiar names also popping into the chat here and there and talking a little trash, but also spending some time explaining what was going on also in the chat. So that was really nice to see also the community coming together a little bit.
In terms of coverage, they set up, I believe, I'm going to get the number wrong, but it was like six webcams.
Yeah, had to be at least that.
Yeah, so we had a couple of overalls and we had a couple of tight end shots. So we pick certain spots on the table and that's who we'd focus on. Those were also tied toward an AverMedia capture card that would loop the video from the video card through a device and then split it off to the monitor and then also to a computer that would broadcast the video back to us so that we could see what was happening on screen. We had some people walking around doing interviews and grabbing questions for us and stuff like that. So it was a really very complex from a logistics standpoint in making sure the cameras were set right. And they had problems with basically CPU horsepower.
Oh, no. Well, let's talk also about the venue, because I know that the venue posted some challenges initially also.
Yeah, it was a very long room. So it was kind of like an event room, but it wasn't very big. And basically the competitors were on table, kind of like this one that we use for podcasting. They had three of them in line. So there was basically 5 feet between the competitors. So that was how they would set up their bench. So it was back to back. And then we needed to get our the little Adreno devices that would run the webcams and then the AverMedia capture cards hooked up in between there. So we had to run a bunch of network cards or network cable, sorry, that yours truly got to make.
Hey, see, you never lose it.
Yeah, I never lose it. And then we had to deal with, you know, when the competitors came in, you know, flipping power switches, they would turn stuff off and then move things around. So the venue itself was set up more for the overclocking, not necessarily for coverage.
No, yeah, that makes sense.
But that was all MSI was concerned with. They wanted to run the event, and we were there to kind of support the event. So maybe in the future that will become more apparent, especially since we spent so much time educating and we had a lot of people watching, mm-hmm. and MSI actually noticed.
Yeah.
So it was good.
Well, I thought the coverage was pretty solid. Although I have to admit, it must be challenging, as you mentioned earlier, to talk so much about overclocking. How much time did you put in on the air?
Over 8 hours on day one and another 6 on day two.
Ouch.
Yeah, that was a lot of talking. On day two, it was the No Limits battle, so there was less happening in a short amount of time. So I spent a lot more time walking around, talking to the competitors, seeing how they were doing, and then come back, and then we would go and move a camera over and then talk about it. So I didn't spend as much time on camera, so to speak, but on day one, it was, you know, talk about SuperPi and talk about Cinebench, and basically we would close in tight on somebody benching, and then I would explain why they were pouring L2 the way they were, and then we'd look on the screen. The funny thing that actually made it in the after movie was how Truthman would call out the blue screens, kind of like a goal in soccer. And in SuperPi, you don't have a lot of blue screens because there isn't a lot of load, single-threaded. But in Cinebench, it's multi-threaded, so you have to start down-clocking your CPU and then getting all the cores to talk to each other. And that's where, if you start pushing things, you'll get blue screens just randomly. So that was one of the things when we were watching competitors. It's like, okay, it's running the edge, it's getting a little slow. Oh, blue screen, you know.
Boom.
So
it was, down they go.
Down they go. It was fun. I actually hope that I can do it again.
Well, I'd like to think so too. I have one last question, and I talked about this a little bit in the chat channel, and I know you had mentioned it a little bit when you were live, but as far as the environment, what was the weather like, the ambient temperature, the challenges of heating and cooling?
Taipei in September, October, it gets really temperate because that's their fall season. So I'm going to say it's a lot like early fall for us. So right as summer starts to kick down, the humidity isn't so bad. Like in the summertime when I'm there for Computex, humidity is horrible and it's really, really hot. So, you know, you grab a soda at 7-Eleven, you come out and basically you got to have a napkin because you have water coming down on your arm. During October, it wasn't so bad. So the humidity was not so, it was like it is here in the falls. Temperature wasn't too bad, but it was also inside, air conditioned. So that helped a little bit. And, you know, in terms of, I guess it rained, so there was a lot of rain, but again, conditioned space. So that didn't really play as a overriding factor in terms of the overclocking.
Now, you talked a little bit about the setup and a lot of this during the live, but I know that there was quite a mix of different ways of setting up the hardware and the motherboards. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned a lot about the needed eraser and also about the Vaseline, but was there an advantage or disadvantage to any particular setups that you noticed?
I noticed that people that used, or the overclockers that used liquid electrical tape, spent less time managing their system.
Oh, now that's good to know.
Yeah, so for instance, if you're using Vaseline, it's very quick to apply, and it's something that you can't, once it's on there, you can't touch it, because you'll create holes, and it just basically sticks to everything. A lot of guys that did use Vaseline were also padding their motherboard with paper towels to soap up water and whatnot. Vivi, for instance, he painted his Z97 M-Power with red liquid electrical tape.
And I saw that in the live chat, and it made a lot of the galleries that were posted around.
Mm-hmm. And, well, partially because he won, but he didn't spend very much time having to pull a video card and dry up stuff. So he was able to bench a lot longer. So I think that there was a distinct advantage to using that over other methods.
Something that you'll bring home and try yourself?
Well, I use liquid electrical tape on video cards, mostly because it's easy to remove. When it's on a motherboard, it's basically it's on there permanently, just like Vaseline. A kneaded eraser is probably the second best option because you can fill in all the little nooks and crannies and be able to remove it. Vivi, I have a picture of it that I'll put in the show notes. When he treated his 780 Ti MOA video card, he used a kneaded eraser actually on the front. So it's a very, very clean. And it was something I actually posted on Facebook as well. I mean, it almost looked like it was a machine laid because it was so smooth. And then the back, I think he used liquid tape.
Well, good to know. Any tips that you would pass on from watching the hardcore guys to the up-and-coming overclockers out there? If you want to be competitive,
practice.
Practice. Practice makes perfect.
Practice.
Now, I know I follow the Facebook, and if you aren't following the Facebook out there, the Hardware Asylum Facebook, that is, you might not know that Dennis also set a personal record for Pepsi consumed on this trip.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I spent $232 on Pepsi.
Holy cow.
Although the thing that I left off of the initial post was is that it was in new Taiwanese dollars, which is divided by 30, and it worked out to be about $7.75.
Wow, that's not anywhere near as exciting. But maybe an opportunity to remind you guys to check out our very interesting Facebook feed.
Yes. Now, you mentioned something about a video card.
I did, and this is a good opportunity to take it out. Now, I am looking at this thing, and I know that there are some pictures in the MOA coverage, but if I'm not mistaken, you're planning on doing a write-up and some testing. Well, you've already done some testing.
Well, I've done some preliminary testing with this card. I'm going to say that this is spoils of war, so to speak.
Very nice. Well, advantages to being invited and being in the right place where these very special cards were available.
Yeah, so I got to bring home a GTX 780 Ti Lightning Special MOA Edition, and basically this is a special-built card that is designed for LN2 overclocking. You don't have to do any mods on it. It's basically completely unlocked. It's a lot taller than like an EVGA classified, mostly to support the 16 power phases.
And that is crazy.
It is crazy. Memory, it's Samsung memory, so it's the super tight latency stuff. It came with a special voltage board.
And that thing's very impressive also. And I see that we have, well, there's an OC Genie button, which is crazy.
I tried using that. I'm not sure how that works.
It says no limits. So yeah, you got to try it.
Yeah. So the voltage board is pretty cool because it has three voltages on it. We have CPU voltage, memory voltage, and PLL, and push buttons to allow you to change the voltage on the fly. So you can change the voltages as you're running the benchmark. You can't change the clock frequency, unfortunately, but that's what Afterburner's for.
Now, a couple of things that I've noticed about this is, one, this supports more than one card because I see a card selector and two outputs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you can run SLI with one board. If you want to run four-way, this basically you get another voltage board. But the competitors were given one board each. And then during the no limits, some people were borrowing cards and stuff like that.
It also looks like it lights up pretty sexy.
Yeah, it lights up. It has a USB connector on top. I'm not sure exactly what that does. But when you plug in the voltage lead, it self-powers off the video card, which is quite nice. The video card itself does not come with a cooler.
I see that.
It comes with a nice heat spreader over the VRM. When I got the card home, I put on a Morpheus GPU cooler, which is like a four-slot, super mega, we're going to cool everything in existence video card cooler thing.
Now, that's an air cooler, though, right?
That's air cooler, and I basically put 220-millimeter fans on it to keep it cool. And noticed a couple of things. One, I could run 2 gigahertz memory frequency with this card.
Which is very impressive.
The other thing was that you basically turn it on, and it gets hot. And that's because the VRM is fully enabled all the time. And when you're running LN2 cooling, the LM2 is going to actually cool the board, so that's going to keep everything nice and chilled. But you also want the power on all the time so you don't get any voltage dips.
Well, I know that I'm running a pair of 770s at home, so maybe I'm not as familiar with this card, but it also seems like I haven't seen a card with three power inputs.
Yeah, you have two 8-pin PCI Express powers and a third 6-pin.
Well, do those extra power leads give you any advantage when it comes to voltage?
Not so much from voltage, it's more current. So a lot like on the EVGA Classified, they have three power inputs on the Kingpin Edition, and that was for extreme overclocking. The more power you have available, the more current you can drive in the CPU, and supposedly the faster it will go. But again, comes down to chip bin.
Well, I know that this is going to be impossible to get, but I see SLI leads. Can you match this card up with a regular 780 tie?
Yeah, you can. As long as they're the same GPU, you can do the SLI. Now, the challenge will be the fact that this board is super, super tall. You have to get flexible bridges and then run them into other cards and stuff.
Well, I'm sure we've got those around the lab somewhere. Last thing I want to mention is I see a dip switch that says original and LN2.
Yes, dual BIOS. So that allows you to switch in between the LN2 BIOS, which is supposed to turn off overcurrent protection.
Okay.
But the thing I noticed is that while MSI Afterburner will detect the card as being different when you change the BIOS, it doesn't change the VRM power. Because normally when it's in normal mode, the power will fluctuate up and down. You can see the lights on the back will bounce around when it's under mode. Right. And in the LN2 mode, the VRMs are on all the time. In this case, it seems to be unlocked on both counts.
Well, we've talked a lot about these unicorns, if you will, of the hardware world in the past and how difficult they are to come up with. So what can we anticipate? What are your plans for this card?
You know, I originally was just going to put it on the shelf and be like a nice little MOA trophy, but I have an itch to see how fast this thing will go. So I'm going to get myself some LN2 when I test a secret GTX 980 card.
Ooh.
And kind of run this card in at the same time. See what it can do.
So definitely more to look forward to. So follow us on our Facebook at Hardware Asylum and, of course, hardwareasylum.com.
Oh, and I have a Twitter now. I finally figured out that I better get a Twitter account. So at Hardware Asylum.
At Hardware Asylum to follow Dennis. And you'll have to let us know maybe what feedback on what we should do to test this silly thing. More to come.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS, now available on iTunes. Join us on Facebook and follow us on Google. This has been a Ninja Link production, copyright 2014. Thanks for listening.